It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. Broadcasting on 100.1 FM, it is your public radio station from beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where we have a few clouds, northwest winds to 8 miles per hour out at the airport, where they have 10 miles of visibility. It's 56 degrees. Look for mostly sunny skies today with a high near 57 and west winds to 15. Coming up on the Midday Report, a former Kodiak resident has won a Guinness World Record. We'll tell you which one. And over 500 refugees entered Alaska last year, a big jump over the past 2 years. Many of them are unsure about how to access health care and other services. And King Cove doesn't get a road, but it does get an ambulance. Those stories plus opioids in the Arctic.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The country is remembering the 2,996 lives lost 22 years ago today in a coordinated terrorist attack on U.S. soil. The passengers and crew of United Airlines Flight 93 are hailed as heroes for preventing their plane from reaching its intended target and instead crashing in a field near Shanksville, Pennsylvania. The names of those lost were read aloud today.
Todd M. Beamer.
Similar poignant tributes are being held at the Pentagon, where First Lady Jill Biden will soon take part in a wreath-laying ceremony, as well as in New York City, where NPR's Jasmine Garst reports.
The ceremony began at 8:25 a.m. with the reading of names of those who were killed at Ground Zero.
Gordon M. Amath, Jr.
Adomiro Abad.
Marie Rose Abad.
Nearly 3,000 people were killed in the September 11 attacks. Many victims' remains have yet to be identified. In addition, the Fryer Department of New York has added 43 new names to the World Trade Center Memorial Wall. First responders who died of illnesses associated with exposure to toxins at Ground Zero. President Joe Biden is expected to deliver remarks in Anchorage, Alaska today while traveling from Vietnam back to Washington. Jasmine Garst, NPR News, New York.
Before departing Vietnam, President Biden paid tribute to a friend.
Freezing!
At the John McCain Memorial, the president remarked, "I miss him. He was a good friend." McCain was held prisoner for more than 5 years during the Vietnam War. The late Republican senator from Arizona went on to become one of the most influential figures in U.S. politics. The Food and Drug Administration has given the green light to new COVID-19 boosters. NPR's Rob Stein has details.
The FDA says the new boosters are safe and effective for anyone 6 months and older. The shots are updated to target a more recent Omicron subvariant than the first boosters. Even though that strain has been replaced by new Omicron subvariants, the shots appear to be a close enough match to still help protect people. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention will issue recommendations Tuesday for who should get one of the new shots. Some experts say everyone should get one. Others say another booster is really only necessary for those at high risk for serious complications from COVID. The shots are expected to become available at drugstores, doctor's offices, and elsewhere this week. Rob Stein, NPR News.
U.S. stocks end the day higher. The Dow closed up 87 points, end the day at 34,663. S&P was up 29. NASDAQ was up 156 points. This is NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. A former Kodiak resident and mother of three has set a record for the largest donation of breast milk by an individual. Elizabeth Anderson Sierra grew up in Kodiak and still has family in the community. She's since moved to the lower 48. Guinness World Records recognized her record-setting achievement this summer, according to a report from KOIN, a TV station in Oregon. Anderson Sierra said in the report that she started producing about 9 years ago and was first contacted by Guinness World Records, but didn't want to be in the spotlight when a formula shortage struck the nation. She told the TV station she wanted to normalize milk sharing and ended up donating 1,600 liters. That's over 50 cubic feet of milk and could fill a chest freezer. She says she hopes her story will encourage others to donate milk. Anderson Sierra was only able to produce so much because of a hyperlactation syndrome. She told KOIN she averages 200 ounces a day. Alaska has seen a big jump in refugees over the past 2 years. Last year, there were over 500 entering the state, and all of them must learn how to access health care quickly, often in a language that isn't their first. Catholic Social Services in Anchorage teaches new arrivals about health and health care, and they've had to expand their services to meet this growing need. Alaska Public Media's Rachel Cassandra has the story.
Lillian Montoya immigrated to the United States from Mexico 17 years ago. One day, she was home alone with her young son when his fever spiked so high that his fingers started turning blue.
One time I called the 911 because my son gets sick. And I didn't know what to do. And I can't even explain them what happened. So I just remember the blueberries, and I say, blueberries, fingers.
She ended up getting her son to the emergency room, but she says it took her more than 2 years to feel like she really understood the U.S. healthcare system.
When you arrive in a different place, and you don't know nothing. So I remember that I have to investigate everything by myself. And now I say, well, if I know the answer, why am I going to make people suffer if I can provide that information?
Montoya now shares that knowledge in her job as a case manager and health advocate for Catholic Social Services. She works with refugees, teaching health classes, working one-on-one, and giving each new refugee a 3-hour health orientation. It's part of a larger effort that Catholic Social Services launched in 2016 to make sure refugees understand the complex and often baffling U.S. healthcare system. To meet growing demand this spring, they started offering new classes and screenings through Anchorage Neighborhood Health Center, and they're looking for a clinic to partner with in the Matsu Borough. On a recent afternoon, 20 refugees sit in rows in the Catholic Social Services Welcome Center and listen as Abdul Wahidi talks about how to make appointments and what to bring with you on your doctor's visits. Kids run around the room.
Okay, if you want to change your schedule or appointment, you have to call the medical or the clinic 24 hours in advance.
Wahidi is a medical case manager for Catholic Social Services. Most of the students are from Afghanistan, like him, and a few are from the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Wahidi says people don't have to make appointments when they get sick in Afghanistan.
If you call to schedule an appointment, they will just tell you you are the number two, you are number three. They don't give you a specific time. This is the time that you have to come.
Many refugees may have left traumatic situations or a country at war, but within 30 days of arriving, they need to have a thorough health screening. They may get vaccines and will get tested for contagious diseases like tuberculosis or syphilis. Navigating this visit is one more hoop they have to jump through, often in a new language. Wahidullah Khan is one of the refugees Wahidi and Montoya work with. He came here from a rural area in Afghanistan 2 years ago. He says the medical system in Afghanistan was much more simple. He speaks in Pashto as Wahidi translates.
Back home, when we get sick, we directly go to the doctor without no appointment. We go see the doctor. They will prescribe medication for a couple of days. If you get well with that medication, good. If it didn't help you, you have to go again.
Khan says that it may be harder to see a doctor here, but they have more supplies.
The difference between the doctors are that they are standard and they have lots of tools like instruments or medical equipment, but back home, they do not have these all the stuff.
Wahidi, the medical case manager, worked as a translator for the U.S. military in Afghanistan for 8 years before he left the country. So he was very accustomed to U.S. culture, like being on time. But he says most refugees from Afghanistan have a much bigger adjustment to make.
Most of them, these people were from villages, they were not living in the city. So that's why if they come here, you have to explain to them a lot to make them independent. But it takes a while to learn everything.
Wahidi says his goal is to help refugees become independent. He teaches people how to ride the bus and how to make their own appointments. And Montoya says she teaches clients to advocate for themselves.
I learned that I can speak up and I say, I don't want the doctor. I need another one. And that's the thing that I try to teach my clients. Like, you have voice, you have rights.
Refugees have a lot to navigate coming to Alaska, but Wahidi and Montoya's work means that hopefully the confusion of the medical system won't add to that. In Anchorage, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
King Cove makes headlines for its long-fought battle over a proposed road that would connect it to the all-weather airport in Cold Bay. The remote Aleutian community says the road is key to saving lives because medevacs have a hard time landing on their small gravel airstrip. So, with such limited access to health care, it's a big deal when the community gets new medical equipment, like a new ambulance. In fact, it can be cause for celebration. KUCB's Theo Greenlee has more on King Cove's new ambulance.
Brenda Wilson got up before dawn to bring her granddaughter down to the ferry dock. And they aren't alone. About a dozen people are gathered to watch the vehicles come down off the Tustamina. They're waiting to greet the new ambulance.
We've been waiting for a new ambulance for so many years. Ours is kind of tilted. It's kind of hanging off on one side. Battery dies all the time. So many things go wrong, and we have people we have to go pick up as EMTs.
Wilson works at the King Cove Medical Clinic, the community's only health care provider. She says they've been using the only ambulance in town for about 30 years. The ferry opens its cargo hold, and you can see the new ambulance, blazing cherry red.
Look at how shiny. That's going to be so awesome.
That's red.
Yeah, yeah, very red.
A new ambulance can easily cost $500,000. Add in the cost of shipping, and it's no wonder a small community at the tip of the Alaska Peninsula has only had one ambulance for 3 decades. But this ambulance is a remount. The company lifted the ambulance cab off the old chassis, stripped it down to bare metal, inspected all the welds, replaced and updated the equipment, new electrical system, and new paint, and blessed it again as a brand new vehicle. King Cove's fire chief, Chris Babcock, says that was the only way they could have afforded it.
We wouldn't have been able to afford like a regular ambulance being built from the ground up. With the remount, it probably saved us 40 to 50% in cost. You know, it's a huge amount of money.
Babcock says the ambulance holds greater significance in King Cove than it might someplace else. There's no hospital, and without reliable medevac access, every second counts.
We need to have a good piece of equipment because we could be sitting at the airport for a little while waiting for one of those medevac situations to come in to King Cove. You know, having this equipment and having updated equipment gives them a little bit more of relief and a little more of, you know, things aren't going to be as bad as they seem. So
I go for a ride along in the bright red ambulance, along with local King Cove resident Carter Utek, an emergency services volunteer.
So last year we had a call. It was the middle of the night. It was pouring down rain, and we were in the old ambulance, and the wipers weren't working. And I was a passenger at the time, and I had to use a squeegee to squeegee the windshield so we could see where we were going.
It's been about a month since King Cove received the new ambulance. The clinic says it's already made multiple trips, including transporting victims from boat and car accidents. And Brenda Wilson says it's already saved lives. Reporting from King Cove, I'm Theo Greenlee.
Opioid use and overdoses have increased dramatically across Alaska in the last 3 years, but that opioid epidemic isn't just affecting people in the big cities. Rural communities off the road system are getting hit too. But as KOTZ's Desiree Hagen reports, for the folks in the Northwest Arctic, help is available.
Ronto Roney is the Director of Behavioral Health Services for Manilik Association, a nonprofit health corporation that serves the Northwest Arctic communities and Point Hope. He says that opioids are a significant concern for the region.
It is a concern for our region just because drugs are transferred in and out of Kotzebue into every other rural community.
Roney says some of their big concerns, though, are people who overdose while in Anchorage or smuggle drugs when they come back.
I think that's primarily where we're seeing a lot of our regional overdoses is when people are making trips.
Marcia Hefker is a psychiatric nurse practitioner with Manilik. She says the recent surge in overdoses statewide is due, in part, to the synthetic opioid fentanyl.
It is 50 times stronger than heroin. And let me explain, there's two types of fentanyl. There is the legal production and distribution of fentanyl, which is by prescription, and that is given by doctors to patients after surgery or in extreme pain situations.
Illegal versions, however, can look identical to the prescription pills, but contain higher doses. Hefker says it can be nearly impossible to detect if fentanyl is cut with other street drugs like methamphetamine, cocaine, and what Hefker calls the new killer, a horse tranquilizer called xylazine.
So not only is fentanyl alone more deadly, but it becomes exponentially so when these other substances are added to it. And unfortunately, what will happen is one of two things. People become more addicted more quickly, or they die.
But help is available. Hefker, Roney, and Manilik's Public Health Nursing Program have partnered with Project HOPE, an overdose prevention initiative through the Alaska Department of Health. Together, they provide training and naloxone to villages in the Manilik service area. Naloxone, more commonly known as Narcan, is a one-dose nasal spray that blocks and removes opioids from the receptors in the brain.
What it looks like is the person wakes up immediately. It's a life-saving treatment.
Narcan kits are for emergency use only. Manilik also provides two prescriptions for the treatment of opioid use disorder, Suboxone and Naltrexone. But help is available for folks who aren't ready to quit, too. Manilik has harm reduction training and a variety of support systems in Kotzebue and the surrounding villages. In some communities, Manilik has on-call behavioral health aides, like Roney. He says there are several call-in community groups for people who are struggling with addiction, and that Manilik tries to infuse cultural practices into all of their care.
And so, like, one of our substance use groups is called Inupiaq Values. We'll name, like, a core value, and there will be a reading about it, but then it'll be a conversation around, well, what has that looked like for you growing up, and what has that looked like with substances? And are you able to maintain this value, or has it shifted because you are engaging in substance use?
He says although there is still stigma associated with people who use illegal substances, the overall goal is to help anyone who's ready to evaluate their role in a community.
We're not going to say, hey, troopers, we got the guy. It's, hey, friend, let's help you find a better way. And that's it.
Roney says that help is available 24/7. Manilik offers scheduled appointments, telehealth options, and an outpatient walk-in clinic every day until 6 p.m. Patients can also access care through their primary providers. And Manilik's emergency room is always open. In Kotzebue, I'm Desiree Hagen.
Local and state officials say they don't have the capacity to address possible contamination from a fire that burned hazardous waste and materials on a Salcha area property earlier this summer. KUAC's Tim Ellis has this report.
Salcha Fire and Rescue Chief Daryl Vanderweg says his firefighters had to carefully work around the structure fire just south of the Eielson Air Force Base boundary last June because it was burning containers of hazardous wastes that were among other junk on the property.
There was a lot of trash and gas cans, propane bottles, and there's all sorts of stuff in there. I mean, I can't identify most of the stuff that was burning.
The 1.2-acre fire sent billows of black smoke into the air on June 28th, prompting the Federal Aviation Administration to impose a temporary flight restriction above the property at milepost 344 of the Richardson Highway. Golden Valley Electric Association sent a crew to shut off power because the wildfire was burning in the power line right-of-way, and Division of Forestry and Fire Protection spokesperson Lily Coyle says that agency also responded.
We had air resources, and we had multiple firefighters and on-the-ground crews responding.
The firefighters contained the pile driver slough fire the next day, and no one was injured. But an investigator working on a report about the fire still worries about the hazardous materials.
There were plastics and tires and cans and some barrels and stuff. I have no idea what was in them.
Ernie Mesowitz is a Salcha Fire Battalion Chief and Forensic Fire Investigator.
They could have been empty. They could have had fuel in them. We just don't know.
The State Department of Environmental Conservation also doesn't know. Spokesperson Kelly Raywalt said any hazardous materials that may have been on the site all burned up, along with the junk and three structures that were on the vacant property. But she says DEC can't say for sure because the agency doesn't have staff that specializes in those kinds of waste.
I don't think this is necessarily something in DEC's purview because we don't have an official hazardous waste program.
Alaska is one of two states that don't have a hazardous waste program, the other being Iowa. Instead, they rely on the Federal Environmental Protection Agency to handle those kinds of incidents. Although the legislature and Governor Dunleavy have agreed this year to create an EPA-approved program. Meanwhile, the Fairbanks North Star Borough doesn't regulate hazardous waste, but its planning department staff is very familiar with the parcels.
Oh, we've inspected this property numerous times. We've been out to the property at least 10 times in the last couple of years.
Borough Community Planning Director Kellen Spillman says he can't do anything about the mess, one of about 230 unresolved junkyard properties in the borough, because he has no code enforcement officers to inspect them.
We're recruiting locally, nationally, anywhere we can think of. In the meantime, it has been a little bit tough to try to keep up on these open cases.
Spillman says the property owners need help to clean up the land, so he hopes they'll agree to participate in a borough program that waives tipping fees for junkyard property owners who haul the stuff to the landfill. Mesowitz, the fire investigator, says the owners are elderly and the property wasn't insured, so they probably could use the help.
You know, after any fire, there's always the potential for hazardous materials, and so at some point there's going to have to be some type of a cleanup there.
Mesowitz says he couldn't find what started the fire, but he suspects it was caused by transients living on the property. He expects to complete his investigation report soon. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
Support for KMXT comes from Alaska's most advanced network. GCI's resilient and redundant network is keeping schools connected across the state. Details at gci.com/education.
A sweet deal in the packaged food business. I'm Novosafa with the Marketplace Minute. J.M. Smucker is buying Hostess Brands in a deal valued at $5.5 billion. Smucker makes peanut butter and jams, among other things. Twinkies maker Hostess has been selling fewer snacks after it raised prices. Qualcomm has a new deal to supply Apple with chips until at least 2026. The previous agreement between the two expired this year. Qualcomm makes chips specifically designed for smartphones. Apple is expected to unveil its latest iPhone models tomorrow. It's the 22nd anniversary of the September 11 terrorist attacks. Wall Street observed a moment of silence this morning before the start of trading. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by JLL, providing commercial real estate leasing and management. JLL.com.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the 11th day of September, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 7:31. It will set again at 8:39, giving us 13 hours and 8 minutes of precious daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 55 seconds compared to yesterday. A record high for this date was 74 degrees, set in 1929, and a record low was 34 degrees, set in 1907, and then again in chilly 2012. Currently 56 degrees under partially overcast skies. Out at the airport, they are showing northwest winds to 8 miles per hour, 60% humidity, and they have 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for mostly sunny skies this afternoon with a high near 57 and west winds to 15. Just a slight chance of showers this evening until about 11 p.m. Then a slight chance of showers again after 2 a.m. Mostly cloudy overnight with a low of 43 and calm winds turning to the southwest to 5 after midnight. For tomorrow, a 30% chance of showers after 2 p.m. Otherwise, mostly cloudy skies with a high near 55 and southwest winds to 5 becoming completely calm tomorrow morning. 30% chance of showers for Tuesday night, and partly sunny skies for Wednesday. Well, let's check in with the brand new, extra short announcement from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 43, issued 10 a.m. September 11th. There will be a 54-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Tuesday, September 12th, until 6 p.m. Thursday, September 14th, in the Inner Karluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District. Closed waters will be reduced from noon Tuesday, September 12th until 6 p.m. Thursday, September 14th in the following area: Karluk Lagoon Exit Channel Terminus at the ocean shoreline. As previously announced, the following areas are open to commercial salmon fishing until further notice: the Outer Aikuluk, Outer Karluk, Sturgeon, Halibut Bay sections, Central and North Cape sections, Northeast Kodiak District, East Side Kodiak District, Cape Alatak, Alatak Bay, Humpy Dead Man, Mosier Bay, Olga Bay sections, Northwest of Fognak, Raspberry Strait, Duck Bay, Iduit Bay, and Outer Katoy Bay, Southwest of Fognak and Northeast of Fognak sections, and the Mainland District. Closed waters are expanded until further notice in that portion of the Southwest of Fognak section of the Fognak District, within 1/2 nautical miles of the beach near the terminus of Molina Creek. Till further notice, within the Kodiak area, that portion of Northwest Kodiak and Southwest Kodiak District south of the latitude of Cape Kuliak, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained in the purse seine fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Closed waters are as shown in the Kodiak area salmon stat charts and detailed in commercial salmon fishing regs. Stat charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And as always, recent salmon fishery announcement information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour recorded phone at 486-4559.
And mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. West winds to 20 knots and today, southwest winds to 20 knots tonight, seas to 6 feet, southwest 15 tomorrow with 6-foot seas coming down to 5 feet tomorrow night. Over in the Shelikof Strait, west winds to 20 knots today with 5-foot seas. For tonight, southwest 20, seas subsiding to 3 feet after midnight, and for tomorrow, variable 10 with 3-foot seas coming down to 2 feet on Tuesday night in the Shelikof. Tonight at 6 p.m. at Bayside Fire Station, there will be a 9/11 remembrance ceremony, which will be combined with a christening of the Bayside Fire Department's new fast attack fire truck. The whole Kodiak community is invited to join the members of Bayside Fire and Rescue for a ceremony remembering September 11th. That begins at 6 p.m. and light refreshments will be served immediately after the ceremony. And you also will have a chance to check out their new fast attack fire truck that is totally cool looking. The Kodiak City Council will hold a work session on Tuesday. That meeting will begin at 7:30 p.m. They will also be having a regular meeting on Thursday, which will also begin at 7:30 p.m. Both meetings are open to the public and will be held in the Kodiak Public Library's multipurpose room. Public members are encouraged to tune in right here at KMXT on 100.1 FM. And the meeting will also be web-streamed. The link for that and meeting packets are available at the City of Kodiak website. If you have any questions, contact the city clerk at 907-486-8636. Also, the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having a special meeting. That's happening on Thursday at 6:30 p.m. in the Assembly Chambers. This meeting was called by the mayor and will be considerations of matter for an executive session. And that will be about discussion of litigation strategy regarding Kodiak Area Native Association versus Kodiak Island Borough.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.